Like a lot of top animators, Linda Miller knew what her professional life path was going to be from an early age. In 1964, she viewed part of Fantasia on a round tube color TV and was hooked. Animation was where she needed to be. 2 years of studying art history in Malibu and Heidelberg, Germany at Pepperdine University was followed by 2 more years at Art Center. One of Linda's instructors, Disney layout artist Guy Deal, pointed her toward the House of Mouse, and Miss Miller was soon ensconced in the studio's feature animation department, where she worked on Pete's Dragon, The Small One, and The Fox and the Hound in rapid succession. Don Bluth, Gary Goldman, and John Pomeroy resigned from Disney's animation department in 1979, and Linda was the first animator to follow them out the studio's doors and on to a decade of storyboarding and animating on features that included Secret of Nim, Land Before Time, and American Tail, among many others. Miss Miller moved on to television animation and video feature work in the 90s and 21st century, and today works for Disney Television Animation. We spoke in the conference room of the Animation Guild on November 2nd, 2011. And we are talking to Linda Miller. And Linda started in the industry back in the glory days of the 1970s. And Linda, how did you get interested in going into animation in the first place?
Well, you know that bit in The Empire Strikes Back where Darth Vader tells Luke that it's his destiny to rule the galaxy? Mm-hmm. It was kind of my destiny to go to work for Walt Disney.
And why was that?
My father, who loved cartoons, when I was 5 or 6, something like that, and unfortunately, this tells everybody how old I am. Back when stuff like The Flintstones and Rocky and Bullwinkle were on in prime time, we used to watch these shows together, and he loved cartoons. His nickname was Mickey. So he had this Mickey Mouse drawing on the side of this converted bread truck that he used to carry around his drapery installing equipment in. And I realized at a pretty early age that the thing was off model, actually. Yeah, I was like, "What is wrong with this?"
It, yeah. Artist or an animator.
Yes.
One of the two.
Yeah. So, I heard my father say fairly often that he thought it would be a really cool thing if his daughter, who was being recognized for an ability to draw as early as like the second grade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That early? Yeah. You're like a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
Animation guys and gals that I talked to, they started drawing in elementary school and never stopped.
Yes, unless their teachers made them stop. But, my father was sophisticated enough to know that his daughter could make a living drawing little cartoons for Walt Disney.
Really?
Yes.
When did he first decide that this was going to be where he would end up?
It was sort of always, it was always there as far back as I can remember, because he liked cartoons. He was a musician. He could draw himself. And, being in California, being, where the Disney studio was.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here. I'm a Valley girl.
Oh, so you're from the San Fernando Valley?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we go back to Darth Vader. I really did grow up conscious of, a place where people could draw cartoons.
Yeah.
And make these movies. And what clinched it for me was. My Uncle Lee bought one of the early color television sets, like around 1964.
Yeah.
And we were over at his house. We were just leaving, and the TV was on, and there was a promo for the Disney Wonderful World of Color.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it was like, this is what we're going to see next week, when I wouldn't happen to be sitting in front of a color TV, because we didn't have one.
Black and white.
Yeah. But there was this clip of the Pastoral Symphony sequence from Fantasia. So
in color,
you know, with the herd of flying horses that passes overhead and lands in the lagoon or whatever that is. And that was like, I want to do that.
Was that like sort of
that was
the magical moment,
the aha moment, as the psychologists would yeah. call it. Yeah.
So yours was looking at a color TV, not in a theater.
Yeah, I hadn't actually seen Fantasia before then. I saw it not too long after that, because it was released for a short run in 64, and they took like classes of school children to see it.
Yeah.
At the Grauman's Chinese Theater. So, you know, the theater itself was a big deal. Yes.
So and seeing it on the big screen must have been awe-inspiring.
It was, yeah.
So your course was set, as they say, when you saw it on television and then in the theater.
Yes.
So that's what I'm going to do.
Yes. And, you know, unlike a lot of people in my field, I didn't have to argue about it. Both my parents understood that people could have jobs in what was essentially commercial art and not starve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's always useful.
Yeah, you know,
because they were on your side. They weren't.
Yeah, well, yeah. My dad was. My mother still thought that law school was the best, you know, was the best deal. But luckily, I had, because I'm also a nerd, so I managed to get an academic scholarship that would fund whatever college I wanted to go to for 4 years.
And where did you go?
Well, it's complicated. I wanted to go to CalArts, but at the time I applied, I didn't have a portfolio.
Oh.
So I couldn't get in. So I figured, let's go somewhere for 2 years, and then I'll try again to get into an art school, and I'll take those 2 years, get all my academics out of the way. So I ended up going to Pepperdine.
Oh, okay.
And that was the first year they had their Malibu campus. So
You were out by the bounding Pacific.
Yeah, it was nice. Also because the campus wasn't quite finished, so it wasn't quite as locked down as it was in subsequent years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the second year, I qualified for their, they had a small program set that was based in Heidelberg.
Hmm.
So I wanted to go to Europe. I wanted to see all the stuff in those museums. So I spent a year in Heidelberg.
So were you a lit major, an art major, a combination?
I was an art major. I was an art history major, because they, the irony was they didn't really have an art program.
Mm. Wow.
So it was kind of studying whatever one would study in a year of liberal arts, and looking at as many pictures as I could.
Hmm. But were you doing a lot of drawing, or were you mainly?
I was mostly looking at stuff. I had notebooks, but again, nothing that would actually qualify as a portfolio.
Were you a compulsive sketcher?
Yeah. I still kind of regret that I managed to lose one of my notebooks right after going through the Prado. I left it in a park in Madrid.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, that's a drag, but...
You had a lot of stuff in it, probably,
huh? Yeah, but, you know, you get so used to disposing of your drawings anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the wonderful thing about working digital. You know, instead of the instead of the box of discards, you can just
blink.
Yeah, just click and it's gone.
Amazing.
Yeah. So 2 years of that, and
so you were at Pepperdine for 2 years?
Yes.
Okay. Then where were you off to?
Well, then I transferred to Art Center.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of funny, too, because, again, I had no portfolio, so the first time I applied, I didn't get in. But the counselor that I talked to suggested that since what they really wanted to see was life drawing, why don't I take a Saturday class?
Yeah.
And get some practice with drawing the live model. And Pepperdine, being a Christian school, wasn't going to have,
naked people
as, you know, sitting around in classrooms anyway.
Yeah.
So,
do you think that the 2 years of art history and observing and then moving to Art Center with, I'm assuming, 2 or 3 more years of doing drawing and all that, was a good way to go?
Well, I don't know if it was a good way to go, but it's the way I went. As it happened, the gentleman who was teaching the class that I ended up taking was the head of the department I wanted to get into, which was illustration at the time, because Art Center made no bones about it being a trade school.
Yeah.
And after a few weeks, he looked at what I was doing in the class and said, why aren't you in the day school? And I said, well, you guys wouldn't let me in. So,
he was impressed with your drawing.
Yeah, he liked what I was doing in the class, so he took me around and got me signed up. So when the next semester started, I was a regular student.
Hmm. And okay, so you did one semester at night.
Yeah.
And then were you working during the day, or were you drawing during the day, or what were you?
I was living at home. So,
back in the valley.
Yeah. And the first year, actually, it was still in Hollywood, and then the whole campus moved to the one in Pasadena.
Oh, yeah.
So in 4 years, I spent successively 4 different places.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Wait a minute. You were at.
I was at Pepperdine in Malibu, then Pepperdine in Heidelberg, then Art Center in Hollywood,
and Heidelberg for
an academic year, 8 months.
Oh, so I thought it was a semester. That's amazing. So, 2 physical locations with one college, and 2 physical locations with the other college.
Yeah.
Well, Heidelberg was probably a little more interesting than Pasadena.
Pasadena didn't have a bunker in the backyard. It was a pretty strange house.
Yeah.
Apparently, during the war, it had been occupied by the Wehrmacht, and then it had been occupied by the Americans. And the room that I stayed in, which was the only single room in the house, had actually been a cell.
Yeah.
It had bars on the windows and a metal door, and we could never get anyone to explain to us whose army actually built it.
Maybe the Imperial German Army from World War I.
Well, possibly. It had a kind of a 30s look to it, although the house itself was very old. And, of course, I am making jokes about gas nozzles as soon as I see it.
Yeah. I'm sure they were thrilled.
Because I'm like that. You know, being the lone Jew in a house with 40... I no longer call them Jesus freaks, but, you know, it was a Christian school, so they were all, you know, fairly devout people.
There probably weren't a lot of Jews at the school at the time you were there.
It was me.
And maybe.
And that was it, yeah. So, you know, if one doesn't have a persecution complex, one develops one, you know, even, you know, these were not people that were getting, you know, on my case about not being a Christian, especially.
Well, that's good.
Yes, but, you know, if you wanted to get away from all the praying, all there is outside is Germany.
Yeah, well,
yes,
it's a nice choice. But getting back to Art Center, so you were there, were you there until you finished the program, or how did that work?
No, I was there until I ran out of money, which took about three semesters. But the important thing was that the last semester, I took a class from a man named Guy Diehl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was at Disney.
Exactly. One day he brought in these very strange drawings that were all in blue, and they were all very long. You know, they were layout drawings, which I'd never seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
And he told the class about the Disney training program, which had just started up. This was like 1977.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were
off and on.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. So this was like the end of Rescuers.
Yeah. Dale Barrett was one of the first. Mm-hmm. And that was 4 or 5 years before.
Yeah.
I think right when you came, they were just kicking into sort of high gear.
Yeah. They'd given it over to Eric Larson.
Yeah.
So, this was, you know, like, this was unlocking the door for me, because every time I had called up any of the local studios, it was always, we're not really looking for new people. We're, you know, animation is a dying art, kid. Why do you even want to go into it?
Thank you. We'll
talk to you later. Yes, exactly.
So Guy was your sort of doorway into,
yes, music. After the class, I grabbed him by the collar and said, "Who do I talk to?" So he gave me the guy, the name of a guy named Don Duckwall.
Great name.
A wonderful name, you know, a perfect name. And I called him up and arranged for an interview, and I came in with, I think, every second drawing that I had done in those three semesters. It was literally the worst portfolio in Art Center history.
Really?
Art Center, they were set up to turn out hack illustrators. I was, you know, taking the hack illustrator course.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was expected to have a portfolio that would be 12 slides in an immaculate leather binder. What I had was a pile of drawings about this thick, about a foot thick, you know, great big ones, little notebooks, you know, just...
And that's what you submitted to Disney.
Yes. And I sat there in Don Duckwall's office for an hour, a literal hour, as he went through every damn drawing. And then he called Eric Larson, and he came down from the second floor, and he looked at every damn drawing. And, you know, so I'm sitting there with these two gentlemen for 2 hours. And at the end, they say, well, we'll submit this to the review board, and you'll probably hear from us in a week.
Oh, okay.
So, all right. So I go home. Actually, I heard from them the next day.
Oh, okay.
Because
that was quick.
It was quick, and I don't think it was because I was so damn talented. It just happened that I came in on a Wednesday, and the review board always met on a Thursday.
Oh, so they said,
So they said, yeah, you know, she obviously likes to draw.
So you started the following Monday?
No, I started, I think, something like 6 weeks later, because I was still in school.
Oh, okay.
So I started when the semester ended. So.
But you could have started the next
Yeah, conceivably. But, you know, the important thing was that I didn't have that interval of waitressing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I lucked out then. And by that time, actually, I had already moved out and was living in Hollywood with my sister.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, there were lots and lots of reasons why it was a good idea to get a job.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah. Sis probably would like you to pay some of the rent.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
So you started at Disney. What was your first impression of the place? Because you started in 1977.
Yes.
And it's sort of the hotbed of Don Bluth's is there at the time, and they're probably still doing Pete's Dragon, or were done?
They were coming in, I think, at about the tail end of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took me some time to figure out, you know, the dynamic of the place. Part of my experience was coming in as somebody from the wrong school.
Art Center was the wrong. There were quite a few people there from.
There were a lot of people, who came in from Art Center, and you know, most of them ended up going with Don because there was a bit of a class system there. You know, Cal Arts was sending them people like John Musker, Ron Clements, Jerry Reese, Brad Bird, and that Lasseter kid.
Yeah, he came in 79, so
yeah.
He came in 2 years after you.
Yeah, well, they all came in kind of as a bunch, and it was...
I remember them coming in waves.
Yeah.
And it was real interesting.
Yeah, you know, immensely talented, and they were the ones who would be following up Frank and Ollie, who at this point were still working. It was explained that, oh, well, these guys are from Cal Arts, so they're going to be working with Frank and Ollie.
Right over here.
Yes, so all you other guys who didn't go to the right school, you'll get on with it.
So who did you mentor under?
Really, it was Don. It was Don and John and Gary Goldman, because Pete's Dragon was Don's picture, and so was The Small One, which followed it up. So, you know, it wasn't so much a loyalty issue, but, you know, I was being directed by Don, and he had a great influence on the training course that Walt Stanchfield was...
Right. Because Walt was there doing
yes.
that.
Yes, I called him Obi-Wan, as he was always talking about animating forces rather than lines.
And he always looked like he was in such great shape, always out
yes.
there on the tennis court, bronze, and...
Yeah.
He was an amazing dude.
He was, and you know, there are things that you take away stuff from some teachers, and I learned an immense amount from Walt. And at Art Center, I had a drawing teacher named Peter Liashkoff,
mm-hmm.
who his method was different from Harry Carmian, who I never had him for a drawing teacher. And he was kind of the drawing god over there, but I always thought that Liashkoff was a better teacher.
Yeah.
Because he was very good at uh, explaining how to look at positive and negative space and how to measure, which was, in life drawing, that's everything. I mean, that's the whole purpose of life drawing is
but
to...
But in animation.
Yeah. You're doing, yes, is and it's absolutely the same, except that in animation, your model is in your head.
Yeah.
But you're still having to make those same choices.
So what you're learning from Walt, and your mentor is Don. Yeah. And so what's the first production that you're assigned to? Are you on The Fox and the Hound, or?
That actually came later. I was an in-betweener and a cleanup artist on Pete's Dragon.
Oh, okay, so you did make it onto Pete's Dragon.
Yes, it's very funny, actually. I was doing these great big close-ups for Dale Oliver. And, you know, lovely man.
World War II glider pilot.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he was, we'll speak of this later. But, I'm interrupting you.
Yeah.
Of Elliot, were you...
It's the song where the live action kid and the dragon are singing this song, and for most of it, the dragon is in a moving hold, so we're having to turn out these, you know, drawing after drawing of, you know, this big head that's not really doing anything, and it has to be rock solid, and I was getting about one drawing a day done. So he came up to my room to see what I was doing.
This is Dale.
To see if he could jolly me along a little faster. And I said, you know, I see people doing this thing, flipping the drawing, and I'll bet it would help me if I could do that, because I'm just, you know, trying to use the bottom light. The problem was I'm left-handed, so I was having a hard time interpreting what these guys were doing. And he threw up his hands in horror. You're left-handed. You have no future in animation.
That's just what Larry Clemens was told by Walt Disney. He said,
yes.
No left-hander ever makes it in animation.
No, of course not.
In Larry's case, he was, in your case, wrong. In his case, right.
Yeah, well, what Dale explained to me was that I would crumple the paper on the wrong side. And animators wouldn't want me to assist them. So I did learn to flip a drawing and, you know, to roll the drawings. And I also learned how to do it without crumpling the paper that people would not...
Your future was assured.
Yeah, so that's you know, I learned not to manhandle the paper. Although I am reminded of, you know, there were people who could not. And I do remember one time poor Will Finn was trying to clean up, I think it was a Glenn Keane scene, to make his drawings of the fox and the fox and the hound look like John Pomeroy's. And this is a very thankless task. And I seem to remember that you know, Will was trying so hard to match this that he actually erased through the paper, which is hard to do in that thick Disney paper.
Yeah, but, I can imagine.
Yeah, but I really had no future in cleanup was more the issue. You know, you need a meticulousness and a focus on detail that I just didn't have.
Yeah.
So I was So I had to animate. You know, that's all there was for it.
Now, I remember from that period, you became a really solid animator really fast. And didn't you animate on the birds? You animated on the sparrow?
In the yeah, I had quite a few of those scenes. I did a lot of chickens. Lorna Cook, I think she was still Lorna Pomeroy then, and I designed all manner of chickens for this sequence where the dogs and the are running through a chicken yard. The punchline of which was that they ended up painting them all white.
And you had designed them to be a darker hue?
Well, we had designed them to be lots and lots of different colors because chickens are a whole universe of color.
Right, but they didn't do that.
They didn't do that. They said, make them white. What the hell? So that way they could see the dogs. So I suppose in that sense it was a practical decision, although if they had said beforehand, we're going to make them white, so don't go nuts. It would have taken us a little less time.
So how long were you in cleanup before you segued over to animation?
Maybe somewhere between, probably about a year.
Really?
Yeah, it took about a year and a half from the time I got into the company until I actually was promoted to animator. So I think I started getting scenes at the beginning of the small one. I showed a couple of tests to Don, and he sort of saw me as someone who could start getting scenes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He said, "You've got it now." At the same time you were starting on a small one,
yeah,
weren't you also working on Don's garage project?
No, I wasn't.
Banjo? You weren't at that time.
I did not, no.
He didn't invite you on until later, or how did that work?
Well, he must have known that I had a knack for animation, because the first thing they do is give you a task. They put you in a room with a lot of paper and an X sheet, which, of course, nobody has ever shown me before. What's this? And Eric, he gives you some very minimal instruction, about how to, where to put your numbers, that kind of thing. And, we're going to give you a month. Animate something for us.
So what was your first animation?
Well,
your first test.
It's a little hard to explain, and it was probably a little, a little hard for them to quite grasp. But I had done a comic strip when I was in college.
Oh, okay.
And some of the characters that I was already familiar with drawing.
So there were characters. Just,
yes, they were kind of caricatures. A little medieval guy who looked a lot like Art Garfunkel.
Oh, okay.
Being pursued by a kind of funny-looking unicorn that was actually a caricature of Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay.
Which no one would know but me, because...
But they liked your test?
They liked my test. It was ridiculously elaborate. It was three scenes, two pan moves,
wow,
and a lot of action. This unicorn was galloping, skidding to a stop, and running the other way. I knew. I had studied animal motion. I'd taken an equitation course in Pepperdine.
Oh, okay.
And for no other reason than my own amusements, I'd spent a lot of time at Art Center just tracing my bridge. So I could do a pretty convincing gallop.
Oh, okay.
So from that, they decided that, you know, I had sufficiently a knack for it to, you know, take me out of just a training program and put me to in-betweening.
So you advanced fairly rapidly.
Yeah, because the rush was on at the end of Pete's Dragon, and an in-betweener was a highly useful thing.
Yeah. The last great start of the great golden age of Disney and everything else.
I would call it the Disney Silver Age,
well,
if anything.
Well, maybe even the Copper Age.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, one of the reasons we left Disney at the time we did was The Fox and the Hound was, you know, a kind of a mediocre film, which, you know, we were not unaware of at the time, but we were, you know, we were sort of looking down the tunnel at the oncoming train that was called the Black Cauldron, and nobody wanted to work on that.
No, I remember Don and Tad worked on that quite a bit.
Well, I did the one thing that I probably shouldn't have done. I read the books. Like I said, I'm a nerd. As an animator, as a story person, as a character designer now, you know, I have this thing for reading. And the book The Black Cauldron is magnificent, and almost none of that got into the picture. And it was, you know, it was sort of pre-disappointment, I suppose.
Yeah, well, God, that went round and round and round.
You know, and there was so little story at the end. It was, you know, it was really kind of a heartbreaker because it could have been, you know, had they had the nerve to just do the damn story. You know, it's kind of one of the unfortunate things about Disney as just as a corporate filmmaker, they tend to believe that they know better than Victor Hugo or Hans Christian Andersen or history. Well, or
that picture got, especially because you had departed at the time, these horrible internal struggles over that picture.
And yeah.
It was not pretty. But so how much animation did you do on the small one? At the same time they were developing the Black Cauldron.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting because I have an objective standard. To get the promotion to animator, you needed to get 100 feet into a picture.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I and three other women got that 100 feet into the small one. So at the same time I was promoted, Heidi Goodell, Lorna Pomeroy, and Emily Giuliano were all promoted, which is, you know, it's kind of a milestone for women at Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were the first four women to be animators since Retta Scott during World War II.
Right. And, I mean, in the course, you're familiar with all those letters if you're female.
Yeah, yeah.
And paint, and it's like,
yeah.
I get a lot of defensive mail saying, well, that's not really the thing. Well, it is really the.
Yes. Well, I'm willing to climb up a step or two and get in somebody's face about that because I think, you know, those four people were as strong a group of animators as you were going to find during the Disney golden age.
Yeah, I think, you know, you and Lorna have gone on to greater glory, and Heidi did a lot more things.
She got into computer animation quite early.
Yeah.
And, you know, Emily made a choice to stay in cleanup because of, you know, concerns about her family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't argue with that choice.
Right. But, so, four women animators for almost the first time at Disney.
Yeah.
And you all...
almost about it,
well,
yeah.
Maybe in Rita.
Well, Rita, you know, she was the one. You know, she was the token.
And Mary Blair was the designer.
Yeah. And, you know, she is beyond all classification. You know, I look at her work and it's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, there was a back and forth recently on the blog just about, you know, the Penthouse Club, they chose to close it rather than admit women. And so, you know, I mean, the whole thing, there was a culture.
It was a culture, but you could say that a bunch of guys in a treehouse is a culture too, and it would be equally invalid.
It was the way it was, and unfortunately, in a lot of areas, it's still the way it is. But so you swing off of the small one and on to the Fox and the Hound.
Yeah.
And are you assigned a character, or are you hopping around? Or designing chickens and.
Well, we did the actually I also designed a couple of characters for a sequence that for a multitude of reasons never actually got into the picture, but I don't think I ever.
What were the scenes?
Oh, I didn't animate on that. It was these two cranes that were supposed to.
Oh, yeah, there was Charo.
The infamous crane sequence, yes, Charo in this.
So you're animating her.
I designed the crane, and Phil Harris was the other one, and we sort of based him on a marabou stork in. Feathers that were supposed to remind people of Travolta's suit in Saturday Night Fever.
That was Wolfgang Ratherman's last hurrah.
Yes, it was. And, you know, I remember people, you know, looking forward to this with real horror.
Well, Art Stevens was like having heart palpitations on the second floor. And it was... Wooly, I always thought, was right and that the picture needed something there.
Yeah, but maybe not right. That.
Not that.
Yeah.
Exactly right. That was not what it needed.
Yeah.
It needed something.
Mm-hmm.
That picture was saved because it had a good opening and a strong ending.
Yeah.
In the middle.
Yeah, it was kind of
so
shuffling
much.
Around. Yeah. I'm kind of trying to remember what I mostly did on that picture. And I think it was mostly the birds. I remember doing some scenes with Chief and one of the old lady. It kind of came up when we all left, because I ended up kind of by accident being the first person to resign.
Oh, really? Now tell me about that. That's really interesting, because all hell broke loose when
it did.
Don,
yes,
and half the staff walked out the door.
Yes. Well, we had. Well, when I got the promotion to animator, I knew about Banjo, and I knew that a bunch of guys were working on this clandestine film, but I didn't really feel like I could ask to be involved in this until I had until I had proven that I could animate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when I got the promotion, I came to Don and said, "Can I work on this thing?" He said, sure. So he, it was sort of like going back to school because he set me to in-betweening for him.
Oh, okay.
Because he was no fool.
So you were working at Disney by day.
And in-betweening his scenes by night.
Did you get any sleep during this period?
Yeah. Because mostly I worked on the weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we didn't really have a deadline because we didn't have any funding until very near the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of like, you know, whenever. But, you know, I knew the rudiments of animation, but working, you know, in-betweening for Don was... You know, was taking it up to a whole different level because Don's animation was a lot different from anyone else's.
Yeah.
He sort of animated in paths, circular paths.
Yeah.
So to in between a scene of Banjo doing a leap up where he spins, you know, that's of course an animation in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sort of took it in those terms that of, you know, continuing the learning experience, and you know, eventually of course I did start animating and you know, got scenes into Banjo as well.